This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
Good morning, Padres fans. Woo! That was a nice one last night. Welcome in. It is Ben and Woods on a Thursday morning. Of course, the first voice you usually hear is that of Stephen Woods. The good news is he should be wrangling his family together right now in Kauai for a very long travel day to get back here and back in studio with us tomorrow. But he's going to be off today. So you've got me. I'm Ben Higgins. And joining me over to my left here is our executive producer, Pauly Rindel. Good morning, Pauly.
Hey, how are you? Are we gonna start the show in any particular fashion?
I think the Padres earned a guttural scream.
I think so.
Let's do it. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Yeah! Come on.
That was a fun one last
night. I know it's
the
Diamondbacks, but man, after losing that first game of the series, that was awesome.
That was a fun one last night, and it's going to test my resolve a little bit this morning. Because my instincts, I just want to dive in and start talking Padres baseball. Because that's what I like to do anyway. But this is our foreplay segment, not our Padres wrap up highlights. We'll get to all of those in about 30 minutes or so, and we will go through the entirety of last night's 3-2 win. But this segment, which really was kind of the brainchild of Woods, is designed to kind of ease us into the show. Let everyone organically start, you know, turning on their radios, flipping on their YouTube streams, their apps, however you like to consume Ben and Woods in the morning, go through what happened in our days, and just kind of ease into the morning without hitting the ground at 150 miles an hour. And honestly,
getting lubed up.
It was a good idea. I kind of pushed back at the beginning, but I eventually saw that some of the greatest moments and the greatest gold in this show comes during our foreplay segment. Usually, though, it's from the guys whose chair is empty right now. Because for some reason, Pauly, and you agree with me
here. Oh, yeah.
He just has the wildest things happen to him all the time. Yeah. I mean, every day there is a story worth diving into. And it's all genuine. He doesn't like make things up for the purpose of being entertaining. These are not fictional stories. They all happen to him. And I just don't think that the same kind of things happen to you and me that happen
to
him.
I mean, look, does he embellish a little bit from time to time? No, absolutely not. I really don't know that he does. He has this ability to take nothing and turn it into not just something, but something entertaining and compelling. And then I think about it, and even when those crazy things that happen to him and seemingly only happen to him do happen, I go, no, he also just has like the most interesting, at least out of the three of us, he's got the most interesting day to day. Like, he's got the kids. The kid factor, I think, really helps out a lot, because you guys have kids of different ages. Yours are kind of off. They're doing their own thing, but his kids are at that age right now where there's just so much relatable stuff that happens where it happens to him, and we're like, oh yeah, that would be great to talk about. Everybody would love to hear that.
You're not wrong, but even when my kids were his kids' age, I didn't have the craziness that seems to happen to him on a daily basis.
Yes, things just happen to him. He attracts this energy, and it's bizarre. You know, I had a moment in the last week where I thanked my lucky stars that I was not Stephen Woods, because it would have gone very different. So I went to Jersey Mike's to grab some lunch a couple of days ago. And on my way in, I set up the order on the app. So all I had to do was walk in and pick it up. I did not have to walk in and place the
order. Of course, that's the way to go, of course.
When I tell you that was the best decision I've made in the last week, let me tell you what happened. So I walked in. They said, hey, are you picking up? I said, yep, for Paul. They said, oh, okay, they're finishing it up right now. It should be another minute or two. I said, no problem. The guy that was standing to place his order next, probably 55, 60 years old. Hi, what can I get for you? He's like, whoa, hey, how you doing there? Yeah, this is my first time here. They're like, oh, welcome. He goes, yeah, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm kind of more of a Subway guy. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, he's doing bits. He's got a story. And they're like, oh, yeah. No, we get it. What can we get started for you? So how do your sandwiches work? Mike's way. What's so good about Mike? What's Mike's way? And I'm just sitting there waiting for my order to get bagged up. And I'm going, if I was Stephen Woods, I would have somehow been behind this guy. And I would have had to sit through 20 minutes of him telling me why he has decided to switch from Subway to Jersey Mike's. What is a Jersey Mike's? It was, I had a sigh of relief, and I go, so this, I just know if Woods was here, he would have somehow said, yeah, don't worry, don't place the order on the app. There's not going to be anybody. We'll just go in and order normally.
So this is the a story straight out of my favorite commercial series, the You're Turning Into Your Parents guy who coaches people not to turn into their parents.
Yes.
That's the guy that he's always talking to, who walks in and has to chat with the people behind the counter,
yeah,
make it into an entire production, ask a whole bunch of questions about, hey, the procedure, it is my first time here, what's going on, and then you're always stuck behind that guy. Of course, Woods brings it on himself because he didn't order on the app in advance, and he ends up standing behind that guy. You're absolutely right about that.
Mm.
So, anyway, Quincy's already... Thank you for your comments this morning. Quincy says, you guys got to scrap the foreplay segment, in my humble opinion. I'm starving to hear you guys talk pods and then immediately get let down and end up turning off my radio.
Oh,
well, you know what, Quincy? For you, the show starts at 6:30. You can wake up, you can set your alarm, and you can just start the show at 6:30. You are not under any obligation to listen to the first segment. We are here for 5 hours this morning, and most of it will be talking Padres baseball. Because
every time you say that, I like go, oh yeah, it's Thursday, and that means it's the round table.
You've got to pace yourself a little bit. If we just come out like shot out of a cannon, you know, to Padres baseball, just spraying it all over the place in the first 8 minutes of the show, I will be sitting here at, you know, 6:11 in 3 minutes going, okay, what are we going to do for the other 4 hours and 49 minutes, Paulie? Because we just went through all of our best Padres material in the first 11 minutes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're going to do.
You know, there's also another aspect of it of, I would like to believe and think that the hundreds and hundreds and thousands and millions of tier ones that are out there, they listen for all 4 hours. They are here at 6 a.m. and they don't stop until 10 a.m. That's not how it works. We unfortunately do have prime times and more times of our 4 hour segments where there are more people listening than not.
I love the tier ones who are in at 6 a.m.
They're my favorites.
They are my favorites. I love everybody who comes
gold
in
star
here at the first thing in the morning, and you are here right away for foreplay and to be with us at this hour of the day, which is a tough hour, let's be honest. I don't care what you do. Anyone who has to get up before 6 a.m. to start their day, whatever it is, if you're working, if you're a parent, you got to get the kids ready for school, whatever it is, there's a bleary-eyed moment where you just wish you could go back to bed. I had it this morning. It's that first... And, you know, our alarm goes off pretty early. Mine went off at 4:23 this morning. And I sit there, and I've got a couple alarms because I realize, you know, that would be dumb to have just one alarm because you could fall back asleep. So I sit there for a couple of minutes. I grab my phone just to kind of start waking up, look at, you know, the Padres story from last night, check social media. And it's usually about 4:26 when I start feeling that sleepiness again, like, oh, I'd love to go back. I'd love to just get another hour or two. I mean, wouldn't it be nice? I get it. So if you're up this early in the morning, really appreciate you. No, you had that feeling like, I wish I could have gone back to sleep for just another hour would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been struggling with, it's so, got the fan going and I wake up and I'm so cold. I'm like, the last thing I want to do right now is get up. I'm so warm under this blanket. I don't want to move.
I will admit, I think I am particularly a little worn out and tired this morning because of my schedule the last 2 weeks.
You have gone through it.
Yeah, tonight will be my my last night of this run. It started last Monday and has gone through actually the previous Friday. So this will be my 10th consecutive weeknight anchoring the evening news on Channel 10. And it has been a really cool experience. I've been doing it for a few months, filling in for Kimberly Hunt when she's out, but this has been my longest stretch by far, 2 weeks on the anchor desk at Channel 10. And I've really come to the realization, and I don't know how many people still watch the the local news, the evening news. Appreciate anybody who does. It's certainly not like it was back in the day. But I've come to the realization, Paulie, that my two jobs are really, really different. And I got into this thinking, okay, very complimentary. There's television, there's radio. But it's very interesting for me to kind of realize that the two jobs have very little overlap, other than I get to talk Padres both times, you know, and do some highlights on TV. And, you know, we talk about the game here. It's a completely different medium and story. Here, honestly, I feel like it's the three of us, and we're a team, and we put together our content and our show the way we want to do it. Certainly, there are guidelines that we've got. You know, we have to get the breaks in. We have certain, you know,
some parameters,
you know, parameters that we have to meet.
Formula to follow a little bit, but it's nothing set in stone.
You know, we get some advice from Adam, and you know, things that he'd like to see us do
that
sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. And like any job, you do have bosses that you need to answer to and certain, you know, performance metrics that they'd like you to meet. But ultimately, what goes on for our 4 hours is up to us. On television, it's completely opposite, at least for me as the anchor. I am basically simply the conduit at the end for an entire team of people that you, some of them you'll see on the air, some of them you will never see. Producers, writers, executive producers, news directors, photographers, editors, who all come together over the course of a day and in a busy, bustling newsroom put together hours and hours of content that then I, at the end, am simply the delivery mechanism to get it to your living room in the evening when you get home from work and you hopefully flip on the television, Channel 10, see what was going on in your community over the day. I am simply that conduit at the end. But other than, you know, the Padres highlights and a couple of sports stories, I don't write most of that. There's someone else who does it. And I feel almost like a fraud sometimes. And I see why, you know, people look at TV news anchors and kind of think it's a silly profession. You're a talking head. You're just the guy who reads the teleprompter. Because in many ways, that is the job. You're sitting there and you are reading the teleprompter work that other people has done. Now, is it that simple? Of course not. You know, I have to make sure I understand all the stories so I can present them correctly. And I go through the scripts and I'll talk to the producers and the reporters about, you know, all right, would you like to do it this way? How are we going to do this? And there is a lot of work that goes into it. But
probably a really stupid question. Like, you do get the scripts and like go over them first. You don't just read them.
If you're doing it correctly, you should absolutely be going through all of your scripts.
But I imagine
beforehand.
There are times where you're like, I'm just going to have to rely on this prompter and hope that it is accurate.
Yeah, you know, when there's like a breaking news story, the producer will say in my ear, hey, we added a story coming up here in the next block. It'll be in the prompter, and you just kind of have to roll with it because it's new and, you know, you haven't heard about it. What's going on? Oh, we got a fire. You know, we'll get you some of the details and, you know, describe what you see on the screen, and we'll have some of the information for you in the prompter and just go. But for the most part, yeah, it's all set up and just kind of reading scripts that someone else wrote and work that someone else did.
A little bit easier when it's like 2 to 3 minute chunks, right? Makes that a little bit easier.
That is part of it as well, because, you know, I will talk for, you know, 45 seconds and then we'll throw to a reporter who will do a package. Then I'll come back and maybe do two stories for a minute or two, and then we'll go to another package and then to a break. So I can constantly kind of update and look what's coming ahead with my next story. There's a big rundown that I've got on my computer that actually, like, story by story, it'll look, okay, here's what's next, and I can follow along and jump ahead and see what's going on. But it's very weird. I mean, back when I was growing up, I could probably have named just about every news anchor and reporter, certainly sports guy in town. Like, I knew who was at Channel 10. I knew who was at Channel 8, Channel 39, and, you know, who was on Fox. It was like, that was big thing. Like, if you were a local TV personality, right, that was like, wow. I mean, they're like big stars in town. I don't really think it's quite like that anymore. You know, obviously Kimberly Hunt remains the queen of San Diego local news, and she's been doing it forever. By the way, she is really, really good at it. I would love to think that, you know, I'm trying to fill her shoes, but she is such a pro, and she cares so much about making sure that, she gets the stories right and that, you know, everything is accurate and presented accurately and fairly as best as you can. You always think, oh, these guys aren't being fair, but she really does so hard. And I do. I've learned so much from getting to sit next to her the last couple of years in our newsroom and watching her do it that I feel like, you know, all right, well, at least I've got a good model for what I'm trying to anchor the news every evening. So it's a weird feeling, kind of being the, I feel almost like a fraud sometimes. I really do. Like, I didn't do all this work. I'm the one talking about it, but I didn't do all this work.
Well, you don't have to feel like a fraud here on Ben and Woods because you do not have a producer who scripts out your entire show here and feeds it into a teleprompter. A little bit easier when it's like a 2-minute package. You could maybe come up with a script.
Yeah, a 4-hour show to script out would be tough.
A 3-4-5-hour radio show to script out. I don't actually do that. Contrary to popular belief, because I've actually, one person that I worked with in the past actually showed up to work and thought that I would script out.
Hand you the script for the show.
Hand them a 3-hour script. Every day, and that their job was just to read it. That is a true story.
If I remember correctly, that show did not pass the test of time, as it were.
No.
Over or under one week?
Technically, probably over.
Over, okay. Let's see. Sevens wants to know, do I get a pay raise for being an anchor? That's a good question. The answer is no, I do not.
Oh. But you're doing a...
Make my normal salary for whatever I do. They can assign me to whatever task they would like to assign me to do on a daily basis.
That's a conversation we could have. That would probably make you and maybe anybody else at Channel 10 uncomfortable. I mean, I'm talking more big picture here. Like, you have no problem filling in, helping out, stepping up for your teammates and doing whatever is required. But at what point does an interim adjustment to your roles and your schedule and your life come with a little bit of a pay increase? Like, you know, if you or Woodsy are like, hey, I'm off on Friday, taking a long weekend, going out of town, that's no big deal. But if all of a sudden, like, you or Woods were like, hey, I'm out for several months for whatever reason, I would be like, well, do I get a little bit of a pay increase to like help out and stepping up? Or like, where's the line drawn on you're just helping out for your teammates and then you're maybe, I guess, being taken advantage of?
Have you ever heard the phrase opportunity to shine, Polly? That would be the opportunity for you to shine. And
it's good for your brand.
Hopefully, yeah, good for the brand. Maybe adding some value in the future if you ever do have future contract negotiations. But no, the answer is I do not get a pay increase for being an anchor. It's not based on what I do during the day. It just, you know,
but what if
do what they need me to do.
Kimberly's been out, 2 weeks?
Yes.
So, I mean, what if they're like, hey, she needs some more time. She's actually going to be out for about 2 months.
Don't think that would change anything. I could go through the legalese of my contract. Certainly, I mean, if you are having a completely different job description, I guess that,
I'm just asking questions. I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable.
I can't say that the job is any easier or harder than what I normally do. It's just different than what I do. And if it comes with more attention, that doesn't necessarily mean that I deserve anything else. It's just, you know, it's been different the last couple of weeks. That's all I'm saying. All right. I was going to go to the crutch of foreplay, which is looking at what national day it is. But then I realized National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day.
That's a real thing, apparently.
Really? I just don't know where to go with that, Polly. Like, National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day. So I'll just leave it there. We'll check traffic with Kelly Danik. I will set the menu for the show. Quincy, you can turn your radio back on here in a couple of minutes, and we'll talk some Padres baseball.
Love you, Quincy. I have a feeling you still listened, even though you said you didn't.
I hope you stuck around for that scintillating first 20 minutes of Ben and Woods and Ben and Paul foreplay. We'll come back, get you ready for the show after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. By the way, trade deadline was 1 week ago today. Since that day, the Padres have gone 4-2. Including last night's 3-2 win, which we're going to wrap up with the highlights from Sammy and Bob in just a moment. could argue that without the trade deadline, might be 2-4 at best in those last six games. So the impact of what A.J. Preller did 1 week ago today.
Morning, guys.
Already being felt. And, yeah, I mean, it's a little early to take a victory lap. I said we don't celebrate trade deadlines last week, but my goodness, this one does feel somewhat celebrational after what we've seen. Ryan O'Hearn.
I was going to say, last night was the perfect
Ramon
example.
Ramon Laureano and Mason Miller last night and the, you know, integral contributions they made to last night's game. Freddie Fermin has been fantastic.
That was the A.J. Preller game last night.
You know what? Nestor Cortez, maybe a rough moment or two, but I thought looked pretty decent, you know, and very promising going forward. So we'll talk all about that coming up as we wrap up the game in our next segment. This morning, with no Woods here, we actually did add a couple of guests, and I'm actually excited. We do have our regular Eno Saris Smart Baseball coming up at 8:35 this morning. Eno from The Athletic,
always
a good. We did add one, yes, guest. And then at 9 o'clock, we will talk with the sporting director, a.k.a. the general manager of SDFC. A.J. Preller's counterpart, as it were, in the San Diego soccer world, Tyler Heaps, is going to be with us as the team gets ready to embark on this last stretch of the MLS season. Coming off the League's Cup play, they return to MLS action on Saturday at Sporting KC. They just had their quote-unquote transfer window, which is essentially their trade deadline where they can make their like final moves to bolster their team ahead of the end of the season and the playoff run. Signed another player yesterday officially, and we will talk a little soccer with Tyler Heaps coming up at 9 o'clock as they're in first place. And just like the Padres, they've got championship dreams. I mean, we have not one, but two teams in San Diego that have legitimate championship aspirations. In October, and I believe November is when the MLS season eventually does wrap up at the end of the playoffs. So could be a very exciting or very disappointing fall.
So they had the transaction, what do you call it? The transaction?
Transfer window.
Transfer window.
Yeah.
Just ended. And they've had this.
Well, it might still be open. I don't really know, but it's right around now.
All right. And they've had a multi-week stretch where MLS games have been put on hold. So it's kind of like their All-Star break.
A little bit like their All-Star break. Yeah, we're kind of in the same sort of. So we'll get kind of a where do things stand for San Diego FC coming up at 9 o'clock with Tyler Heaps. And then at 9:35, he had a very busy last 3 days. He had a late flight back to San Diego with the Padres on the team plane. But we have to talk to Sammy Leavitt. In-season Sammy coming off 3 games of play-by-play here on 97.3 The Fan, including a dramatic win last night. We got to get his thoughts and how he experienced it and how fun that was for Sam Leavitt over the last 3 days. So he's going to come and share his stories of being in the booth at Chase Field over the last couple of days. And then at 10 o'clock, we will head into the sound space and we'll do a little roundtable. You and me will be joined by Chris and Scraby and Braden, and we'll talk more Padres baseball commercial free from 10 to 11, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. In and around that, it's a throwback Thursday. Paulie's got old clips like he always does. We'll play real or fake instead of take on Woods. Convenient since Woods is in here today, so chance to qualify for that trip to Las Vegas. Don't do this. And an early Rindle report today with those late guests. Paulie's going to get some headlines for us in the first half of the show around 7:40. So stay tuned for all of that. We will get started, though, with our Padres wrap up of a walk, well, not a walk-off, but a ninth-inning dramatic win over the Arizona Diamondbacks coming up next year on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. First, before we get to traffic, I want to tell you about Trust and Will. Back in late December, as we were heading into the new year, one of our sales execs came and said, hey, they want you to give this a try. Just go onto the website, trustandwill.com. And see what you need. Do you guys either have a will or a trust? And Woods and I both admitted, even in our late 40s at the time, we did not. We had not really thought about it. Something we had just kind of put off. Both kind of felt, at some point here, we should get it done. So glad we went to trustandwill.com. The process was simple. It was simply some online questions and answers. Took me about 20, 25 minutes. And at the end, you have real legal documents, either a will or a trust, which can keep your family out of lengthy, expensive probate court if something should happen to you, give your family immediate access to your funds, your estate, all without going to a lawyer's office, paying a bunch of billable hours. It can be thousands of dollars. I had my buddy did it a few years ago. He said it cost him like $3,000 to set up his legal documents. Not anything like that. You'll get an affordable process, and you'll get 20% off when you use the code FAN at checkout. F-A-N at checkout at trustandwill.com. Don't put it off another day. Check it out. Go to the website today. It's trustandwill.com. That's trustandwill.com. Right, before we get to the highlights in our wrap-up, a couple of pregame thoughts for you, Pauly, including a pet peeve of mine directed towards some of our Padres fan base out there. First of all, Fernando Tatis Jr. given the day off yesterday, and Mike Schilt commented on that. In case you were wondering, Mike Schilt confirmed that Fernando Tatis Jr. was off. He was not coming in to pinch hit in that game. In fact, he wasn't even fully dressed in uniform in the dugout.
It was a funny moment when Jesse and Mudd were saying, and you know, not often do the Padres have this one particular player available to come off the bench, but, and they mentioned Tatis, and then the camera panned over to him, and he was wearing, like, no uniform. He was just chilling, and Jesse goes, well, actually, never mind. That does not look like somebody that looks like he's ready to go into a game anytime soon.
And he wasn't. And Mike Schilt said he had, you know, he didn't really get an All-Star break because he went to the All-Star game. He's been playing a ton. We wanted to give him two full days off. And by a full day off, that means you don't have to do the pregame prep or work to get ready even to pinch hit. If you may or be available to pinch hit, right, you got to do all your research on their relievers. And, you know, you got to go through the tape, who you might be facing. And you got to be mentally locked in for the entire game because they could call on you any moment, which is what a day off normally is for a baseball player. But in this case, Mike Schilt said, no, I wanted a real day off, 2 days off, including today's off day for Fernando Tatis Jr. So there was no way he was getting into that game. And they pretty much assured it by not having Fernando Tatis Jr. even dressed in a full uniform. I mean, I guess, you know, if three guys had gotten hurt and the Padres have no one left and he could have gone back into the clubhouse and thrown on his jersey and taken an at bat if he had to, even though he wouldn't have been obviously fully prepared for it. But that's what Mike Schilt said before the game. By the way, if you want to hear more from Mike Schilt, you can tune into our manager's report with Mike Schilt tomorrow at 9 a.m. here on Ben and Woods. The manager's report is refreshed by EcoWater SoCal. Try alkaline water for just $9.95 a month. EcoWater SoCal, keeping it soft since 1925. The pet peeve, though, and I saw this a lot before the game yesterday, because the Dodgers had lost earlier in the day, the Reds had lost earlier in the day, and the Mets had lost earlier in the day. And I saw a lot of people say, well, this is now a must-win game for the Padres because you can pick up one game in the standings on everybody. So what happens if all three of those teams had won? Are you going to say, well, now it doesn't really matter?
It's a must-lose.
Now if you lose a game. It doesn't matter what the other teams do. Every game remains equally important for your team's chances. If they all win, you want to win because you don't want to lose any ground. If they all lose, you want to win because you'd like to gain some ground. If one of them wins and two of them loses, you want to win so you can gain ground on one of them and not lose ground on two of them. Do you see where I'm coming?
It's making a lot of sense, Ben.
You see where I'm going here. If you're saying today is a must-win game, then you're saying every game is a must-win game, which it's great to have that mentality. You'd like to go out and win every game, but it's also baseball, and you're not going to win every game. And I just wonder what happens, you know, if the Padres didn't win that game. They lose a must-win game. Generally, the definition of that is, well, I guess that's it then. It's all over. You lost a must-win game. So don't have that mentality every single day that you look and see what the other teams do, and then it makes it more or less imperative for your team to perform. What's imperative is for the Padres to go out and win series consistently the rest of the season. And they probably won't win every single series even the rest of the season. But if they win most of their series the rest of the way, they should have a very good chance to make the playoffs and a good chance to maybe even catch the Dodgers and win the division. That's what they need to do, is play consistent enough baseball that results in series victories, and they were able to do that over this last week. Weren't perfect, lost a couple of games, but won both series, picked up some ground in the standings, continued to push forward. That's how you do it in Major League Baseball. But every particular game is not a must-win game the rest of the season.
No, it's not a must-win game, and I absolutely, you know, we'll get into the game here after the grappa, but there was an aspect early on of, okay, this might be a turn-it-off-early type of game, and I'm glad it wasn't because I loved the fight that the team showed. It was not super aesthetically pleasing to start, and I'm thinking, Nestor Cortes, like after seeing Sears struggle the other day in his Padres debut, and then seeing Nestor giving up one in the first, having bases loaded, nobody out in the second, I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go again. And it ended up being one of my more favorite wins of the season.
It would have been a bummer to lose that game and lose the series. You definitely would have felt like it was a missed opportunity, to be sure. And I was right there along with you, celebrating what feels like one of the more significant wins because of how it happened. And because it delivered a series win, and because you climbed a game in the standings.
Like the Diamondbacks sold, but they're not, I'm not ready to call them a bad team
yet. No, they're
not
bad, especially at home.
To go on the road, like, look, it's, you want to win that series 100%. And you think, like, Monday's game sucked. I hated every part of that game. That one was easy. But, like, then you win Tuesday, and you're like, all right, let's go out and win this series now. This is important. It's not a must win, of course, technically not, but you want to win that series 100%.
So they get the job done. We will go through the game and all coming up right after a check of traffic. Don't go away here on 97.3 The Fan.
I love winning, man. I love winning. You hear what I'm saying? It's like better than losing.
Miss any of the Padres win yesterday? Ben and Woods didn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got you covered with all of the highlights.
Oh, yes.
It's the
Padres wrap-up.
Brought to you by Hamul Casino Resort. Things are about to get real with the all-new Hamul Casino Resort. With gorgeous rooms and exciting new eats and drinks. It gets real this summer at Hamul Casino Resort, the player's place.
I want to go fast, but I want to go slow, and I want to go deep.
Otsu laced into right center, going back. Merrill along with O'Hearn. They're both looking up, and it's gone. Corbin Carroll, a solo home run. One of the deepest parts of the yard, deep right center. Arizona takes a 1-0 lead here in the first inning. 1-1 driven into left. It's down the line. Will it stay fair? It will. Xander Bogaerts, a solo home run. And that gets the Padres on the board. They cut the deficit in half. It's 2-1 here in the seventh. Swinging a high drive into left center, chasing back Laureano. He'll get there, a couple of steps in front of the track, make the catch. McCann tags up, heads for third, throw there is in time. They got him. Where was James McCann going? The relay, Laureano to Iglesias to Manny Machado. And a double play to end the inning. Swinging a drive into right. Carroll going back at the warning track, looking up, and it's gone. O'Hearn, a game-tying solo home run in the ninth inning. His first home run as a San Diego Padre. And just like that, the Padres tie it in the ninth. It's 2-2. Swing line drive, right field, base hit. Xander Bogaerts drops in from third. Padres in front, 3-2. A go-ahead RBI single for Jose Iglesias. 0-2 on the way. Swing and a miss, strike three at 1-0-3. And the Padres win. 3-2 the final here in Arizona. The Padres move two games out of first place in the National League West. Mason Miller strikes out three in the ninth inning. He went upstairs to Del Castillo, got him to wave right through it at 103 miles per hour.
First is the acclimation. These guys have just fit in. They're just good fits, and I know AJ did his part on the makeup, the competitiveness, the character, the professionalism, the baseball IQ, and all of them check all those boxes. They fit in really well, very, very open to whatever you need. And do whatever the team calls for.
Trade deadline acquisitions making a major impact in last night's come from behind 3-2 win over the Arizona Diamondbacks. By the way, felt really happy that Sammy had a chance to call an exciting win there at the end of his three-game stretch filling in for Jesse. That goes on to the reel, And no matter what happens to Sammy in the future, he's got that under his belt. Not only a major league broadcaster, but got to call a dramatic ninth inning game tying home run and go ahead single. I mean, pretty cool for Sammy.
What's the one of the craziest stats in baseball? We say it any time a guy makes his MLB debut. He's one of that. It's like 20,000 people.
Yeah, they're a little over 20,000 now. It could fill half of Petco Park.
Every player
that has ever played in Major League Baseball
would be half of Petco Park. So I got to imagine that the number of people that have called Major League Baseball games is significantly smaller than that. Sam Levitt's one of them now.
That's a great thought because, you know, you've got 26-man rosters and, you know, 40-man rosters every single year.
It's a lot of people.
The guys who call the game, you may only have one or two or three different guys at most in a year, and they may be the same guys year after year after year. So you're not adding to those numbers regularly like you are. Hey, another rookie makes a debut in Major League Baseball, especially this time of year, almost every day someone's getting called up. In broadcasters, no. I mean,
yeah, player pool numbers getting
only
bigger.
You know, four or five different guys a year who get their chance to call a first major league game. So that is a very small fraternity.
And Sammy's such a professional, but I can't wait to talk to him later this morning because I just want to know. I'm like, all right, I hope you got to soak it in. I know for me, Sammy's done this now a couple of times, but I would still have the jitters and kind of that, oh my God, I made it type moment. It's when you get on the team playing. That's got to be the coolest thing. I was like, I hope as much as I know that he was a professional and was not trying to get in on, Manny Machado's poker game or anything like that in the back of the plane. I'm like, I hope you got to just soak it in and kind of just take it in for a second and look around and be like, man, congratulations. That was really cool that you got to experience that.
Definitely be trying to stay under the radar on the plane.
God, yes.
Don't even notice me. I'm not here. I only flew on one team plane ever. The Chargers actually let us fly with them to London in 2008, I think it was, when they played the Saints in that game at Wembley Stadium. And we got on the plane in Buffalo because that's where they played that previous
Sunday. Did they
take
one big plane? Was it two smaller
planes? One giant plane.
Okay.
And the media, they put us way, way in the back. But it was comfortable. You know, it was it was a nice flight. I mean, it was a regular plane. It wasn't like one of those tricked out first class all the way back planes.
Right.
But I had my own three seats to myself in the back because it wasn't completely full. And yeah, flight passed pretty well. It was a red eye overnight after the game. You know, left Buffalo around 8 or 9 p.m. and then flew all night and landed in London in the morning. So that was my only experience, but, you know, we never even saw a player the entire time, and I was mostly working when I was on the plane. So, but it's an interesting experience, and I'm sure one that Sammy is going to remember for the rest of his life. Now, as for the game, like you, Paulie, I was nervous about Nestor Cortez simply because, you know, after J.P. Sears struggled and you traded away Ryan Burgert and Stephen Kolek, the one thing that you don't want to see is the Padres run out of starting pitching. Now, it looks like they're heading in the proper direction. Michael King will start on Saturday. That was announced after the game by Mike Schilt that after Nick Pivetta goes tomorrow, Michael King will return to the Padres rotation on Saturday, and Dylan Cease will start on Sunday. So Pivetta, King, Cease for the three games
Here
against the Boston Red Sox. Things are looking up for the Padres pitching staff. But when Cortez struggled in the first inning and gave up the home run to Corbin Carroll, I was definitely starting to be concerned. Is both of the pitchers that the Padres picked up at the trade deadline going to scuffle here down the stretch?
J.P. Sears, it could have been a little PTSD from his outing. He was just getting shelled. He was not missing. You know what I mean? He was getting torched to the point where, do they know what pitch is coming? It was kind of, it left a bad taste in your mouth. And then when you see Nestor struggle initially out of the gate yesterday, you're like, oh God, here we go again. Here we go again.
So Nestor got ahead of Corbin Carroll 0-2 with two really good pitches, bad butt out, fouled off swings by Corbin Carroll. 0-2 pitch. One of the worst 0-2 pitches I've ever seen. I mean, it was a batting practice right down the middle.
Yeah.
And Corbin Carroll just smashed it to center field. I'm going, you could not have thrown a worse pitch in that situation. You can do anything you want there. You can try to get him to nibble more off the zone, go high, try to get him to swing at an eye high fastball. You can go inside to back him off a little bit, go change up low. There's so many things you can do at 0-2. And he throws this just absolute BP, straight as can be, right down the middle, and gives up the home run. And I go, well, that's not a good sign from Nestor Cortes at all. But after that, he really was actually pretty good. I know the next inning he loaded the bases with nobody out. It was just like a single, and then two balls that were inside that weren't even like wild pitches that grazed a uniform and like nicked off a hand that loaded the bases. You know, you're pitching inside. That's part of baseball. Mm-hmm. And then he gets out of it, allowing just the one run on a sacrifice fly. That was really well done. Pitched a good third, pitched a good fourth. Definitely looked like he was starting to tire then in the fifth a little bit. And he said, you know, long off, you know, hadn't had that rehab start in 10, 11 days. First start since, you know, April or whenever he's been on the injured list. So he said that may have contributed to not being able to go as deep as I wanted in that game. But I'm sure the Padres weren't expecting 7 or 8 innings from Nestor Cortes in his third start of the season in August. So ultimately, I think Nestor acquitted
himself really well. I wasn't expecting 4
really well.
Innings the way it started. Honestly, I swear to God, I was not. I was like, oh, no, here we go again. Here comes like this long, weird bullpen type game. And it was a weird, kind of a weird bullpen game. You got multiple innings out of both Morihone and Adam, and a great job by them as well. And then Mason Miller comes in to close it out. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. We now have, like we've been saying all year, really. I mean, any of these guys in the bullpen, these high leverage guys, really could step in at any moment and be a closer. But to have really now two legitimate closers, and we've talked about it. I know it's, you don't want to get too ahead of yourself yet and start planning your playoff rotation or anything like that. But we did talk about with all of these acquisitions that they made at the deadline and bolstering their bullpen, you kind of have like lanes now of like, seriously, like actual game lanes once you get into the playoffs, where it's just you got to go one game at a time. You're like, all right, this is kind of like 1A and 1B bullpen lanes.
But I wasn't necessarily expecting to see it yesterday. And Mike Schilt made a fairly bold choice with the Padres down 2-0. Hadn't done anything offensively against Anthony DeSclafani. I was thinking, all right, maybe Sean Reynolds and some Yuki here. I mean, they're not winning, so, you know, don't use all your high leverage arms, you know, for a lost cause. But he went aggressively with Jason Adam as his first reliever, struck out all 4 batters he faced to keep the Padres there. Xander Bogaerts hits the home run to get him within 1, and then he goes with Adrian Morihone. So, you know, Mike Schilt said, I'm going to chase this win from behind. It's one thing when you're trying to protect a lead. Then, of course, you're going to your horseman, right, you know, and you're trying to lock down that win. But when you're chasing from behind, you are like, okay, this is a gamble because I'm using these guys in a situation where even if they pitch well, we may not win the game if we don't score any offense. So it's a risk to do that. And it's one that he felt like he could do, though, because of the off day tomorrow. And I also believe because Nick Pivetta is starting on Friday, the guy who has pitched deeper into games for you most consistently this season. You're hoping now in the next 2 days, you may not need more than 2 innings from your bullpen. You know, an off day followed by 7 from Nick Pivetta would get a real nice reset for your bullpen, you know.
Especially with some uncertainty on Saturday with Michael King. Yeah, 100%.
So he thought,
I like the way this is lined up.
He thought he could be more aggressive. He went for it. You know, Adrian Morihone then pitches 2 innings, gives up 1 hit, but they're still down 2-1 going into the 9th. And then they, you know, they pull it off with the Ryan O'Hearn solo home run. What a great at-bat by Ryan O'Hearn as well. 1-1 pitch, but against a lefty. And he had not hit a lefty, gone deep off a lefty all season long.
Really? That was his first one?
He dominates righties, but against the lefty there, that would have been a spot where if you were going to use Fernando Tatis Jr., you would have pulled the trigger because Ryan O'Hearn doesn't hit lefties as well, but managed in the biggest situation. And he has been clutch all year long. His WRC plus in clutch situations through the roof this year. So he continued the clutch behavior. Then Xander, can't say enough about Xander, by the way.
He's been incredible.
I mean, I thought maybe we had seen the best of Xander when he went this hot streak about a month ago. Last couple of days, I mean, the swings he's putting on the ball, the home run, the double he hit there in the 9th inning.
He has been so clutch.
Set up the go-ahead run. He's been fantastic. Xander, keep it up, man. It's been awesome. And the Padres end up winning 3-2. Got some more thoughts from the game last night. Padres did make a couple of gaffes on the base paths. We can talk about that and more. Ben and Woods with Paulie here, continuing on a Thursday on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.